It's time to kick it off, yeah. It's time to do a great Amber May show. Is here with topics you like out in the desert where the sun gets hot. So drop on into that Amber May spot.
I'm so glad that you tuned in today to the Amber May Show. We are continuing our discussion with Jason Clay. If you missed the show yesterday, you're going to want to hop back on my website, ambermayshow.com, and go to the podcast page, because we're continuing Jason's story, and you're not going to want to miss any of it. Now, did you serve any time incarceration?
No, I've been arrested a few times. I've been in jail. I've never been to prison. Another part of the testimony is, during that time that when I started driving escorts, right before I started driving escorts, I had actually got involved in drug trafficking. I quit one of my clubs in the summertime, and what a lot of people don't know about that industry is that the summertime is the hardest time for bouncers and security to find work, just because of the seasons that go along with the clubs. And I was working at this like construction place, and this guy had asked me, would you like to come do what I do? And I said, what's that? He said, drive cars across country for rich people. And I sounded, legitimate enough. So I said, okay. Well, come to find out, it wasn't nothing like that. We were driving Jeep Cherokees with 300 pounds of marijuana from here to Detroit, and getting paid $2,000 a trip. About a month into that, something happened with the guy that got me involved in it, and then the main guy, and we were in Detroit, and an argument ensued, and it just wasn't good. So the guy's fiance took us in her car to drive us to go get the vehicles that were in our name, out of our name, so because we were done. And something happened on the way there. My friend at the time and this woman got in an argument. She ended up slapping him. I'm sitting in the back seat of this car. She slaps him. He takes the car, throws it in park, takes the keys, and throws the keys out into the desert or wherever we're at. And I followed suit. I took the Heidi key because I've been in that car several times and chucked it also. We left that woman there on the side of the road, flagged down a cab, and we were thinking, what are we going to do? I said, well, we got to go all the way now. We're not getting out of this either way, and so we might as well go back to that house and take him for everything he has. And at that particular time, there's $175,000 cash and 500 pounds of marijuana in the basement of this house, and we took it. And then as we took that, we were in cahoots with the guy that owned the house. He made up a story that we tied him up so he wouldn't be in trouble. And during that time, we were jumping hotel to hotel while he was trying to sell that 500 pounds so we can get our money. And again, we're in Detroit. I've never been to Detroit, so every time we were at a hotel, we get a phone call and saying, hey, they found you, skip hotels. So we jumped about five hotels, and I remembered I had a friend out there that was watching his brother's house because his brother went to London for the winter. And I called him, and I said, hey, I didn't tell him exactly what. I just said, I'll give you $5,000. Let me come and stay with you for as long as it's going to take. Probably won't be a week, but just, ask no questions. He said, absolutely. So the guy I was with and myself drove over there. About 4 days later, we get a phone call saying that the marijuana was all sold. We met up, and we split it, and we came back, and then and that was that. But about 4 months after that is when the DEA and all the law enforcement agencies came in to grab me, and nothing happened. I paid $25,000 for a lawyer. I still had a lot of that money left, and the only thing they had on me was my driver's license for Michigan. And so they didn't, when they raided the PO box, that's all they had. So they knew I was involved, but not how much. And so I was able to get away with pretty much some probation and a hefty fine and community service hours. But no, never been incarcerated in a prison. That was the closest I came.
Wow. What's it like always having to look over your shoulder all the time?
Well, it was It was crazy at first. I didn't think nothing of it. I thought, we just jacked this dude. He's not going to say nothing. He's a big time drug guy. What's he going to say? And I took the money and I made some phone calls. And we were driving back from Arizona to Arizona. And I surrounded myself with a lot of shady people, people that I knew would protect me. And in fact, those people actually went and sent a message to him. The main guy, because he was still in Arizona as we were driving back, and I never heard nothing again from him. And so I guess I was arrogant and confident that, you know, I just took this dude. I'm surrounding myself with these guys. What are you going to do to me? And the longer that it went, that nothing happened, the more arrogant and more, you know, aggressive I got.
What about the girls in all these situations now? Did anything happen to them physically? Were they assaulted or hurt or anything like that?
Definitely in the escorts one. The escorts, they absolutely. There are girls that don't have drivers because they don't want to. As a driver, I was getting $20 to take them to the call and 20% of what they made. A lot of girls don't want to pay that. So they'll drive by, you know, they'll just show up to a call by themselves. And those are usually the girls that get raped or beat up. But I would say the escort one, compared to the clubs, the escort is definitely the most nervous I've ever been, because you don't know what's coming behind that door. And there's key words that she says. It says she's running. And when I know she's running, it's my job to get up on that door and make sure we get out of there and get paid. The club scene, well, the problem you got there is the girls, they want to make that extra dollar, that extra 100, that extra 50. So they will go with the customer, and they have been raped. Again, you just kind of get immune to it, you know. And interesting story about that. A year before I came into the Dream Center, I was watching Fox 10 News, and one of our girls, she's from Chicago, and she had went with a customer, and we hadn't seen her for a few days, and there's no big deal there, because usually these girls meet a new guy and then they go play house or do what they do, and then they usually show back up. And then but she didn't, and about 5 days later, like I said, I was watching Fox News, and it said so-and-so, which I knew her name, and I looked up at the news, and there she was floating in a canal. Yeah.
So what led up to the whole thing about you overdosing on pain pills and almost dying?
I think at that point, I knew something was different. I knew things were changing, because I, you know, as a manager, I made a lot of money for the clubs. As a doorman, I ran crews that were, you know, made the clubs safe. But I don't know. I started thinking that, you know, I just wasn't happy no more. And like something was missing. And I was always trying to, you know, find, you know, peace and, or, you know, just something. Just, I just wanted a normal life. But I knew that, you know, I was so afraid to walk away. You know, I thought, you know, I tried going to church, actually. I would go sit in, the church that I attended at the time was a Phoenix First Assembly, and I would sit in the back and I would pay my tithes, and I would think, okay, that makes me justified for what I'm doing. At the end of the day, you know, I was still back in the clubs. You know, what happened with me was I was trying to, you know, fill a void, and I never got into drugs or anything like that. And then these last couple years of me in the working in that environment, I think I was just wanting to just kind of numb reality and just live in that little pill world where you take a happy pill, as they call it, and some, you know, a little bit of drink with that, and you just, you don't think about it. I started using more and more and more, and I mean, my habit was expensive. I mean, as a manager, I was making anywhere between $60,000 and $75,000 a year, and I have, you know, when I came to the Dreams, I have nothing to show for it. I mean, I'm doing sometimes $200 a day just in pills.
Wow.
And that's the new drug. It's not the new drug, but as the clubs, as I first got into them, you had the, you know, the heroin, the crystal meth, and the coke, and they still got some of that, but it's not as bad as the prescription painkillers. That is the drug of choice for most of the people in that industry now.
And you're addicted before you know it, right?
Before you know it, you think, well, okay, I can do this, and I'm fine. You know, and you're functioning on it. You know, at first you almost test it. You know, like for me, I'm telling myself, I got mind over matter. This ain't gonna control me, so I'm taking this. Like, yeah, I'm good, I'm functioning, and then you know, until something drastic happens, like what happened to me, you think, you know, you live in that fantasy, like, yeah, I'm good, you know, and then, but you're, in reality, you're really not. You're destroying yourself, and yeah, I just got real immune to them and just took a lot, it was pretty bad.
Now, did this happen at the club while you were working? Did you, like, collapse or something? They call 911? How'd that happen?
Yeah, the funny thing is, from what I was told, because I don't remember anything, was that I had slumped over in the front of the club. They had called a friend of mine who was also a manager there, and he came, and they took me in the office and put me on the couch. I was still breathing, but it was a funny type of breathing pattern. And they said, yeah, so they called the owner, and the owner, you know, what you can understand, too, is, like, again, nothing's more important than the club. So they just want to get me out of there. So they took me in, threw me in a cab. Nobody drove me home. They threw me in a cab and said, send him to his apartment. As I was going there, the owner got wind of it and called the cab, because we use the same cab guys all the time. And I said, hey, how's he breathing? And I guess he said he's not looking so good. He said, no, you don't take him to his apartment. You take him to the hospital. And that's what I was told. As soon as I got to the hospital, as soon as they dropped me off, is when I stopped breathing. I shut down.
Wow.
So
I mean, thank God you had that guy look out for you on that end.
Right.
So how did you end up at the Dream Center?
Well, through a pastor. I had a pastor there that knew my mom since my mom was 19 years old. And he made way for me to come in and got me into the program. It's a life recovery school, and it's a faith-based, and that's how I got started in it. So,
now, did he come to the hospital with you? Did your mom drop you off at the Dream Center? How'd that work?
No, she was driving me home from the hospital, and that's when she showed me that picture.
Okay.
And then that was on a Tuesday, and then Wednesday I was at the Dream Center. And the funny thing was is that Satan wasn't done with me yet. 2 days after I got there, we have to check in the morning to see what our daily routine is, you know, our chores, if we have chores and classes and all that. And as I was walking up the stairs from that check-in, boom, down I went. Don't know anything again. Next thing you know, I'm waking up in the back of an ambulance. I'm like, what is going on? And I guess I had a seizure.
Wow.
I was still detoxing from the amount of pills that were in my system. And I had fell and cracked my head on the stairs there. And I've never had a seizure before then, and haven't had one since. And the painful thing about that is they took me to the same hospital I almost overdosed at, so they couldn't give me nothing for the pain or anything like that. So I felt them clean out my head, and I felt every staple that went in my head. So that was not a pleasant thing. But again, that was, I think the devil saw that, you know, I was serious about this and tried to trip me up one last time. And a lot of people didn't think I was going to come back. Like, man, he's a club guy, man, because I got a 10-day medical leave. But I knew that one of the things that make you do is that, you know, you say, you know, you give your heart to Christ, you say the sinner's prayer. And when I said that in that pastor's office, I wept like a baby, as they say. You know, I never used to believe all that until it happened to me. And but I knew in my heart right there that God was already going to work in me. And I knew when I was out those 10 days, I was coming back from, I said, you give me whatever homework or assignments I'm going to need for those 10 days, because I don't want to be lacking. I'm coming back. And I came back. So
that's amazing. So what did going to the Dream Center do for you?
What it has done is allow me to sit back and be patient. That lifestyle I live was so fast-paced, and I'm like they say, we live in a microwave society. You got to have it now, and that's how I was, and that's how I always been. So I think it taught me definitely patience, and be able to wait upon the Lord, which is something I just can't do, you know, I couldn't do. I was like, no, I need to know what's going on, what's my future. So I would say it's taught me patience, to allow me the ability to speak. I've never in a million years would have done this, what I'm doing right now even. I've actually spoke at ASU. I've spoken in front of 200 people there at the Dream Center when they had some other churches come in. I speak to different people, and that's something that God's given me that voice, because there's no way that I could be doing this without him. Absolutely not. I'm kind of even though it was a fast-paced lifestyle I lived in, I was kind of still kind of a private person, and kind of let my actions speak for themselves type of guy.
The love of God is transformational. I mean, once you experience that, there's no going back in my mind. You went from a life full of pain, full of anguish, full of hardship, where you felt like you were always on your own. Mm-hmm. And once you have a relationship with God, you no longer feel like you have to accomplish everything by yourself, because now you have a God who says he's going to take care of you. Mm-hmm. If someone wants to find out more about the Dream Center, where can they go?
Well, we have tours every Tuesday at 11:45 a.m., and it's 3210 Northwest Grand Avenue, and that's in Phoenix. Or you can go to our website at www.phoenixdreamcenter.org, or the number they can call is 602-346-8778, and that's for everything. That's for to just look at the facility if they want to donate anything, any materials, you know, toiletries, anything that they want to do, just be a part of, you know, just even just come out and see what we're all about. You know, be much appreciated.
Well, I want to thank Jason Clay for coming on the program, talking about his story, talking about what God's done for him. And thank you, because I know this story is going to help somebody somewhere in the world. Maybe we won't know it right now, but someday we're going to find out how your story influenced somebody else. And so thank you, Jason, so much for coming on the program with us.
Thank you, Amber, for having me.
And remember, instead of thinking about number one, just yourself, think about number two, somebody else, because eventually number two is going to look out for you.